Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
I'm Josh McGrath, and this is your weekly sports update. An enticing matchup is on tonight's NHL schedule as the Toronto Maple Leafs get set to host the Colorado Avalanche. The Maple Leafs have won 9 of their last 10 games and have allowed the second fewest goals per game in the league. The Avalanche have scored at least 5 goals in 5 of their 8 last games and are expected to get star Nathan MacKinnon back from a lower back injury. The Edmonton Oilers look for their 5th win in 6 games when they host the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. Oilers star Leon Draisaitl enters the game with the league's leading 40 points. Also tonight, the Ottawa Senators host the Vancouver Canucks. It was a big day for the New Jersey Devils' center Jack Hughes. The first overall pick in 2019 NHL draft returned from a 17-game absence after accepting an 8-year, $64 million contract extension. General manager Tom Fitzgerald announced the signing of Hughes, who had been out with a dislocated shoulder. The big contract comes despite Hughes' modest offensive numbers. He has 22 goals and 58 points in 122 games. The New York Giants gave an indication of their concern about starting quarterback Daniel Jones by signing quarterback Jake Fromm from the Buffalo Bills practice squad. The Giants announced the move before today's practice. It was reported yesterday that Jones has a neck injury and his status for Sunday's game against the Miami Dolphins was uncertain. Dallas Cowboys rookie cornerback Nashawn Wright has tested positive for COVID-19, becoming the 8th player or coach to be sidelined by the coronavirus for tomorrow's game against New Orleans. Coach Mike McCarthy and 5 members of his staff won't make the trip because of a positive COVID test. And in the NBA, Raptors have dropped 3 straight games after Jaren Jackson Jr. scored 25 points to lead the Memphis Grizzlies past Toronto 98-91. Pascal Siakam had 20 points to lead the Raptors, who fell 2-8 at home. Toronto has just won 3 times in their last 13 games. The Phoenix Suns have set a club record for consecutive victories by winning a matchup of the NBA's 2 best teams. DeAndre Ayton scored 24 points, and the Suns claimed their 17th consecutive win by knocking off the Warriors, 104-96. Chris Paul added 15 points and 11 assists for the Suns, who also won 17 straight during the 2006-2007 season. The Suns won despite losing star guard Devin Booker to a left hamstring injury in the second quarter. He had 10 points and 2 rebounds in 15 minutes. Jordan Poole led the Golden State Warriors with 28 points, but Stephen Curry managed just 12 points on 4 of 21 shooting. Anthony Davis scored 25 points, Russell Westbrook added 23, and the Lakers overcame the absence of LeBron James to slam the Kings 117-92. The Lakers sent James home earlier in the day after he was placed in NBA's health and safety protocol. DeMarcus Cousins will attempt to boost a Milwaukee Bucks front court that's missing injured center Brook Lopez. The Bucks announced Tuesday that they have signed a 31-year-old 4-time All-Star. Lopez hasn't played since a season-opening victory over the Nets because of a back injury. Cousins played a combined 41 games with the Rockets and the Clippers last season, averaging 8.9 points, 6.4 rebounds, and 17.4 minutes of play. The Toronto Blue Jays finalized their 5-year, $110 million contract with right-hander Kevin Gausman. The 30-year-old will be counted on to provide the star power to the Blue Jays' starting 5. The American League CY Young winner Robbie Ray leaving Toronto for Seattle in free agency. Gausman was an all-star with San Francisco last season. He posted 14 wins, a 2.81 earned run average, and 227 strikeouts. Major League Baseball appeared headed to its first work stoppage in 26 years after a pair of brief negotiating sessions led to little to no progress. The sport's 5-year collective bargaining agreement expires at 11:59 p.m. tomorrow. Management is expected to follow with the lockout of the Major League Baseball Players Association. Major League Baseball hasn't had a work stoppage since 1994-95. Tiger Woods didn't have a lot of answers about his past or future as he granted full media availability on Tuesday for the first time since his February car crash. Tiger Woods didn't have a lot of answers about his past or future as he granted full media availability on Tuesday for the first time since his February car accident. Woods says he has no recollection of the crash in Los Angeles suburbs that shattered his right leg. As for the golf, the 15-time major champion says he hasn't reached a point where he can even decide whether he wants to return. If anything, he says he won't be playing a full schedule again. I'm Josh McGrath, and that is your newscast.
The Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome to CKDJ 107.9, The Press Box. I'm Tyler Sear. I'm joined by my host, Greg Avaropoulos, and Josh McGrath. Say, gang, Aaron is not here. He's out of town, but we are going to call him and see what he has to say about the show this week. But for now, we are a group of three. Greg, how do we feel about this? I know you're not very happy about it.
You know, it's been a tough few weeks. We haven't got four people. Maybe what, first show was our only time we got four people, yeah.
The first show was the only time we had four people.
Yeah, last week we had three. The week before, we had just me and Josh. So, you know, hopefully one day we'll get four people. Let's hope. Knock on wood. Is there any wood in here? I think it's wood.
Josh?
New year, new us. You know, hopefully we can all get rid of the sicknesses. Hopefully we can all stay in town. I know we're hoping that we'll be on campus more, so I think that will make it easier for us to kind of all be in the studio together. So I think we have a good shot at that next year. So sorry, everyone, in advance for that.
We have a bit of an announcement. So instead of recording a show every single week during Christmas, we're going to record a Christmas special. This is going to be about a three-hour show. We're going to have many guests. Not too sure who they're going to be so far, but we are going to have a lot of guests on the show. And if you want to tune in, it should be in about 2 weeks or so, our sixth show, and it'll be a three-hour Christmas special. Don't worry if you miss it the first time. It'll rerun quite a little bit. So stay tuned for that. Do you guys have anything else to say before we start this show off?
Hopefully next week we can kind of give you guys an update on who will be our guests for the Christmas show. We're going to make some calls this upcoming week and this weekend to try and get someone on. So,
Greg, anything?
No.
Let's get started then. Up next, we got a local sports update. Josh, you want to start us off?
Yeah, inside the OUA, Carlton Ravens men's basketball made the trip to York this past weekend. They came home with two victories that ended their first half of the season. They're sitting at the top of the spot, locked with Ottawa U at 6-0. The women's basketball program also made the trip to York University. They split the games with a 69-70 win. They split the games with a 69-71 loss and followed it up with a dominant 100-68 win. The ladies are sitting at 5-1 on the season. Both programs return in the new year to face their inner-city rivals, Ottawa U. And for the Ottawa U programs, both men's and women's teams visited Toronto Varsity Blues. Both teams walked away 2-0 on the weekend, and they're sitting at the top of their ranks at 6-0. The women's team won 81-51 and a 78-43, both in dominant fashion. The men's team hung on to win a tight one with an 82-71 win on Saturday and a 61-53 on Sunday.
On to hockey for, you know, U Sport and OUA. The Ottawa GGs have won their last three games. They beat Carleton on the 20th. They beat McGill on the 26th. And then they beat McGill again at home on the 28th. Their next game is this upcoming Friday, the 7th, against Concordia. And they currently sit first place in their division. They are 5-3-1 with 11 points. Queens sits in first in the East Division for the OUA. Windsor sits in the first for the Far West Division, and Brock is in first for the West Division. So a bit of a tight-knit battle going on there. Carleton is in second in the Far East, and they are 4-4-1, and they're doing pretty well at themselves too. We've seen a lot of battles of Ottawa versus Carleton on both the men's and women's side, so hopefully there's more of that to come.
Nice.
On to CHL news. The Ottawa 67s won against North Bay 3-2 last Saturday and lost their second half of a back-to-back against the Peterborough Petes 3-2 on Sunday. Ottawa's next game is Thursday night in Niagara. Across the river, the Gatineau Olympiques have a younger squad this year, and they just beat the Rimouski Oceanic twice last weekend, 4-2 on Friday and 2-1 on Saturday. The Olympiques are currently fourth in the league and second in the Western Conference for the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and their next game is on Friday night at 7 p.m. against Chicoutimi. Off to Josh for the Ottawa Blackjacks update.
The Ottawa Blackjacks re-signed head coach Charles Dubé-Bray. Blackjacks come off a conference finals appearance in only their second year as a team. They look to build on this in this upcoming season. Catch the Blackjacks returning in May.
Go.
And now for our Nepean Raiders conversation. They recently lost 14-2 over the weekend.
14-4.
Yeah. I apologize.
I mean, it doesn't matter. They got scored on 14 times.
It was bad. So,
it was really bad.
What are your guys' thoughts on the game?
Josh, you want to start us off here or what?
Yeah, so for me, it was a little upsetting. I was at the Pembroke game about a week and a half ago now, and their defense, we had made key points that the defense had to step up. Their defense did make a big step up that game, and then they regressed heavily against the Ottawa Junior Senators. It's pretty unfortunate to see that. I know they are a young squad, but I think 14 goals inside two periods is pretty unacceptable. Because I'm not mistaken, they were up 4-1 or 4-2 at the end of the period.
Yeah, so it was 4-2 after the first period, and then they let in 6 goals in the second and 6 goals in the third period. An absolute just bang. Just like, oh my gosh. And they were playing really good hockey. We had myself and Bradley Rogers on that one for the call, and Bradley just kept saying how Nepean was playing a really physical game and how it was working because Ottawa's not very good when it comes to physical play. But it didn't end well. It really didn't end well. Greg, where do you think the Nepean Raiders went wrong on Sunday?
Well, we obviously did the Navin game 2 weeks ago now, maybe. And kind of the same things, you know. They just kind of just look flat, like when they're playing. I mean, obviously they had a strong start going up 4-2 in the first period. And, you know, they kind of just stop moving their feet. Their defense is not very good. Their goaltending hasn't been the best. And, you know, you know, the season is basically it's almost over, and I think they're at the bottom of their division right now, so it's not looking good. Hopefully they can rebound. Maybe this the end of this year, maybe next year. I don't know, because they've really struggled this year so far.
Yeah, we're coming up at about the halfway mark of the season, and the playoffs are still in sight for the Raiders, but they gotta get started now. They gotta start winning immediately, and there's only 12 teams in this league, so it's really easy to win if you start winning, kind of thing. I mean, you win, you're beating teams that are ahead of you no matter what, so you're immediately gaining on every win. So, I mean, do you guys think they could do it?
Absolutely. I think it starts this weekend on Friday. They play Rockland Nationals. I think if they can go to Rockland, make a statement game, I think that's going to really help them spark this comeback in the season. It's pretty unfortunate looking at the standings right now. They do have 2 more wins than Cornwall, but since Cornwall does have a few more OT losses, they're getting some more points. So it's kind of, it's been pretty rough for them.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, they're playing Renfrew on Sunday as well, and that's going to be another game that they must win. I think CP was a must win last Friday, and they didn't win that one. So, I mean, I got a really funny photo, though, guys, of the penalty box in CP, and there's just 5 guys in it, and it is such a small penalty box down there in Carlton Place, so it was a really funny photo. But, hey, nonetheless, I mean, if the Raiders want to bounce back, I think you're right, Josh. It's this weekend, and this weekend only. Any time after that, you're done. Like,
yeah, it's not looking good for them. I know they're young, but I don't know. I think 14 goals is unacceptable. They did allow 21 over the entire weekend as well, so that was also very unfortunate. Their defense has got to be a lot better, and so is the goaltending, and that's where it starts from.
Yeah, and we saw 3 players out this weekend as well. Again, that's Jeff Taylor, Owen Hollingsworth, and Tyler Melvin all out of the lineup. So the Raiders really got to get things done without their top 3 players, basically, and they've elected to call up a bunch of U18 kids, and their U18 team is very good. I mean, it's quite unfortunate because they're actually going to lose a couple players to the OHL, and for the Raiders, that's not a very good sign. So, anyway, this has been our local sports update. We're going to throw it to a little bit of a break, and then we will be back with an NFL conversation.
Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box. We are going to get into our weekly NFL game picks, and we're going to start off with the Thursday night game tomorrow with the Dallas Cowboys and New Orleans Saints. Dallas had a big loss to Vegas in overtime last week. 1 million flags were thrown in that game, by the way. I think it was the most ever, or most in like the last 30 years or something like that. And New Orleans with a big loss to the Bills on Thanksgiving. Dallas is favored by 4.5 going to New Orleans. I'm going to pick Dallas to win and to cover. They're going to get their star receiver back, Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. So I think they'll take this one easily.
I think the Cowboys are going to win and also cover. Josh?
I'm going to pick Cowboys to win and cover, but it is a little sketchy with five coaches not making the trip to New Orleans. And as well, Nashawn Wright is not going either, along with three other players who have COVID. So it'll be still a tough game for them, but I think we can pull this one out.
All right, on to the Minnesota Vikings and the Detroit Lions. NFC North matchup, the Lions. They lost again on Thanksgiving last week to the Bears. They're now, I think, 0-11-1, 0-10-1, something like that. They're versus Minnesota. Minnesota had a rough loss to the 49ers. They lost by, I think, 8 points in the fourth quarter. It was a close game, really good game to watch. I want to pick Detroit because I just think they're going to get one at some point, but I can't do it. I think the Vikings are just way better. Vikings are a good team. I like the Vikings. They're favored by 7. I think they're going to win and cover 7 points.
I'm doing what I did last week. I'm picking the Lions until they win, Detroit Lions, because I want to get at least one right, you know? So, over to Josh.
I'm going Minnesota. They win, they cover. Detroit, I think, is going to have a winless season.
Oh, my gosh.
Man, that would be rough.
That would suck.
All right, on to the Arizona Cardinals and the Chicago Bears. Arizona's favored by 7.5. They're going to – looks like they're finally going to get – they've been without their star quarterback, Kyler Murray, for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I want to say. And DeAndre Hopkins, their star receiver, also maybe might come back when he's been out for a while as well. They're coming off a bye. Once again, Arizona has all their stars back. Chicago's still going to start Andy Dalton, that quarterback, and they barely won against the winless Lions. I'll take Arizona to cover 7.5 and easily win the game.
Cardinals win, Cardinals cover.
Cardinals win, Cardinals cover. I think they're too much of a firepower offense.
All right, Tampa Bay going to Atlanta to face the Falcons. They're favored by 10.5. Big time spread there. And, you know, Tampa Bay, they barely beat the Colts last week. The Colts actually should have won that game that they played. But Tampa Bay just stormed back in the second half. Leonard Fournette with 4 touchdowns, I think. He had a game winner as well. I think they're going to win the game, but I don't think they're going to cover 10.5. I think I'll take the Falcons to cover, but the Buccaneers to win.
The Buccaneers to win and cover.
I think Bucks are going to win just because Tom Brady has Atlanta's number.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Now the Colts, who we just talked about, going to Houston to face the Texans. No need to talk much about this game. The Colts obviously looking to rebound from the tough loss, and they're way better than Houston. Houston, one of the worst teams in the league. They favored by 9.5. I'll take them to win and to cover 9.5.
I'm going to just take the same pick as Greg. I mean, he knows what he's talking about a lot more than me, so this one's kind of like...
Yeah, no point to debate this one, to be honest.
It's iffy, no reason to. The Colts... win and cover.
Yeah, Colts win and cover.
All right, next game here. The Philadelphia Eagles going to the New York Jets. Once again, this game, awful. Philadelphia favored by 6.5, though. To be honest, I don't really care much. I'll go Eagles win and they cover. That's really not a big deal.
Eagles win, but Jets cover.
I'm going to go Eagles win, Eagles cover.
All right, the Chargers going to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. This one could be one of the games of the week, besides another game we're going to talk about later, but... the Chargers, Cincinnati, they both came off big wins last week. Cincinnati, I think they won. I forget who they beat the division rival, the Steelers. They blew them out. It was actually pretty crazy. Really fun game to watch. Or no, the Chargers didn't win. They got blew out by the Broncos. That was pretty crazy. And I'm going to take Cincinnati. They're favored by 3 points. I'm going to take them to win it to cover, but this game is going to be a good game, though.
I think this is going to be a really good game. I think the Chargers are going to win, but yeah, Chargers win easy.
I'm going to go Chargers win as well. Just I think Chargers are going to have a really good week this week.
All right, the Giants and the Dolphins, another game that's not too appealing to watch if you're a viewer of football.
What are you talking about, man? Jalen Waddle's been on a tear.
It doesn't matter. Both teams aren't very good. I mean, he has been. You're not wrong, though. The Dolphins have actually won 4 games in a row now, I think, but against a really weak schedule, but... Yeah, they've looked pretty impressive. I'm going to pick them to win again against the Giants. They're favored by 3. I'll take them to win and to cover.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same. I think Miami's going to win and cover. Easy cover we're talking about here. Jalen Waddle getting another 5 touchdowns kind of thing. We're going to go for it.
I agree with both you guys just because the Giants are missing Daniel Jones this week, it looks like. So it'll be interesting to see how the Dolphins can capitalize on that.
All right, the Washington football team going to Vegas to face the Raiders. The Raiders are favored by 2.5. Washington, big win last week on Monday night against the Seahawks. That was a huge win for them. I think they've also won now around 3 or 4 games in a row. Pretty impressive wins they've had, too, and against Vegas, who obviously beat the Cowboys. Really impressive win by them as well. Vegas is favored here. I'm going to take them to win, but I'm going to take Washington like to cover. 2.5, it's really low, so it's going to be hard to determine who's going to cover, but I think Vegas wins by 1 point on a game-winning field goal.
Oh, wow. I think Vegas wins and covers easy. I think they're going to win by a field goal.
I'm going the Washington football team. I really don't like their name, but I think that they're playing really good football right now, and I think they're going to go to Vegas and make the upset.
All right, the Ravens and the Steelers. Ravens, obviously, they've been really up and down this season. They were first in the AFC for a little bit, and they're kind of taking a tumble. They lost to the Dolphins. They barely won against Cleveland on Sunday night. Lamar threw 4 interceptions in that game. He did not look good at all. And Pittsburgh, obviously, I mean, they're kind of just a whirlwind. Big Ben looks like he might be finished. He doesn't have much arm strength in his arm anymore. They got blew out by the Bengals. Baltimore's favored by 3.5. I'm going to take them to win and to cover 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, I think Baltimore is going to win and cover. I gotta go for my defense here. I got Baltimore as my defense, and I gotta root for him. So Baltimore win and cover.
I'm also going to go Baltimore win and cover, and I think Lamar's going to have a massive game this week.
All right, on to Jacksonville and the Rams. The Rams are favored by 13 points, which is a lot of points. And with the way they've been playing, I would not favor them by any more than 5 points at all. They've lost 3 straight, I think. Yeah, 3 straight games. They were 7-1 at one point. Now they're 7-4. And they have not looked like the same Rams we saw early in the season. Jacksonville, obviously, I mean, they're not good either, though. But, I mean, I think I'm going to pick Los Angeles to finally get back in the win column, but I don't think the Rams cover 13 points.
I think the Rams win, and I think they cover, actually, because, I mean, the Bills just destroyed the Saints. So I do think the Rams are going to win and cover. Plus, I'm rooting for them because they're my team. So, I mean, ain't nobody can tell me different.
I'm going to make Tyler upset here. I'm actually going to pick Jacksonville to win. Last week when me and Greg watched the Packers game together, it was brutal.
It was bad.
Watching that Rams team play on offense. Stafford, hopefully he's healthy, but he seems like he's going to have that injury going into this week. So,
on to the San Francisco 49ers going to Seattle. They're actually favored by 3.5 points going to Seattle, which is a little unusual because home team is usually favored. It starts at 3 points, but unless it's a lopsided matchup, but they're actually favored by 3.5, and they're an away team, so that's pretty impressive. I mean, San Francisco been playing really good recently. They just beat the Vikings, who had an impressive win the week prior to the Packers and against the Packers. And I really like the San Francisco team so far. They're playing really well the last few weeks, I think. And Seattle has looked, man, they've looked awful this year. I don't know what's going on with them, but I'll take San Francisco to win and to cover 3.5.
I think the same thing. San Francisco win and cover.
I also agree. San Francisco win and cover. It sucks that Seattle is not doing well because I love Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of him as well. But, hopefully he'll clean it up. He might even be on a different team next year. You never know. But on to the Sunday night game, the Denver Broncos going to Kansas City to face the Chiefs. KC favored by 10 points. I'll take them to win and to cover. I know the Broncos had a big win last week against the Chargers. I don't think they do it again, but they are kind of a streaky team, so who knows? Actually, I'll take KC to win, and I'll take Denver to cover. But I'm not picking the Broncos to win the game. No chance.
I'm going to go same thing. I think KC wins, but I don't think they cover.
I'm going to go Kansas City wins and Kansas City covers. They've been playing pretty decent football the last few weeks, and if they can get going early, I think it's going to be a big blowout.
All right, on to the Monday night game, the last game of the week. The New England Patriots going to Buffalo to face the Bills. This is a big game, probably the biggest one of the week. Whoever wins this game is first in the AFC East, may even be first in the AFC, I want to say, or it'll be kind of close. But, Buffalo, obviously, they've had really high highs, but they've also had really low lows this year. And New England is 6th straight now. They start off the season not very good. They've now won 6 straight. This is probably the biggest game of the year for both teams at this point. I'm never going to bet on a Bills game again. I said this last week. I'm never doing it again. So I'll just hand it over to you guys. Buffalo's favored by 3 points in this game, by the way.
Yeah, I think the Patriots are going to win. The Patriots are on an absolute tear. I'm very sorry, Greg, but I think the Patriots are going to win this one.
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah.
Greg already knows what I'm going to say. New England's going to win this. It's going to be a big win. And when they play again in like 2 weeks, I think, after that, New England wins again. The things Belichick has done with that defense and that offense has been unbelievable. after that rough start.
All right, we know Josh is just saying this to make me upset, but, you know, I don't think he actually feels like this. But we're going to throw this one over into our NBA conversation. Josh, you want to start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of NBA news, the big one happened yesterday. It was announced LeBron James has been put on health and safety protocols due to COVID-19. As a Lakers fan, I'm very, very frustrated about this because, you know, he just came back off suspension. Right before that, he was out for 10 games because of an injury. Now he comes back, expected to miss another 10 games due to this. Guys, how do you feel about that? Because it's not like LeBron to be doing these types of things, and it seems like he's kind of on his way out, I would say.
Yo, he's kind of like, he's like a dog on a leash, but the leash broke loose. He's gone. He's doing whatever he wants. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I think he's always had the, that's the thing, is I think it's kind of vice versa. I think the league's kind of putting a leash on him now. Because I think at one, like, I think at the start of the season, actually, he hosted a big party, and the league didn't put him in health and safety protocols because it was for his company. So he was allowed to do whatever he felt like. But now, the league kind of seems like, you know, after the scrap, after LeBron sitting out 10 games because of his abdominal injury, seems like they're kind of putting a leash on him. Greg, how do you feel about that?
No, yeah. I mean, as we know, LeBron, you know, he kind of just does whatever he pleases. Which, to be fair, all the power to him. He's LeBron James, one of the best basketball players ever. He's number two in my book. That's all I'm saying right now. I'm not going to debate that. But yeah, he's obviously, he does what he wants. And for his team, that's a big blow because the Lakers have not looked very good this year. Even when he's played, they haven't looked the best. I mean, they had a big one last night though. But I mean, I don't know, man. I don't really like the Lakers team right now. I don't think they're the best in, especially with the way they've been playing. They need all the help they can get. So LeBron getting COVID is like a big blow for them. Do you know if LeBron's vaccinated?
I believe he is vaccinated.
Okay,
yes.
So he should be back soon. But yeah, I mean,
well, for the NBA's health and safety protocols, you have to sit out 10 days whether you're vaccinated or not, and okay, then you have to return with two PCR tests.
That's a big blow then.
Besides the Lakers, next up, we're going to talk about the Suns. They're now on a 17-game winning streak. They've tied their franchise record for most wins consecutively. My question is, do you guys think they're going to beat the record of 26 straight wins that the Lakers hold back in 86-87 season with Magic Johnson, Kareem, James Worthy, and all those cats?
I actually really like the Suns team. I really liked them last year, obviously. Lost in the conference finals. It was kind of a heartbreaker. Lost in the finals. But yeah, heartbreaker. Giannis won the finals MVP. That was a really good series. I really like the Suns team. 17-game winning streak, really impressive. Even though we know like how good of a team they are, but just looking at their history from like the last few years, it's pretty crazy to see. Like if you told me like 5 years ago the Suns were gonna go on a 17-game winning streak and maybe make the finals, I'd call you crazy. But now playing really well, Devin Booker, CP3, role players, Mikal Bridges, he's really good. I really like their team. 26 is a lot of winning. I don't think they can do it. But I like the team though.
I think they've sort of figured out how to win. I mean, they've figured out what they need to do and how they need to do it and what players they need to do it with. And I also love the Suns. I think they're doing a great job. I mean, honestly, there's not much to hate about a team coming out of Arizona. Like most people's team seem to like the Cardinals. A lot of people tend to like the Coyotes unless you live in Arizona. Even though they suck. So, I mean, I'm a big Suns guy, and is everyone healthy, Josh?
Yep, they're all healthy.
Then I don't see why they can't, you know? I mean,
so I think they're going to Golden State on Friday. So they get the rematch, and it's in Chase Center this
game
time.
Game of the week.
Curry, I don't think he's going to shoot another 4 of 21 from the field. No way. I think Curry's going to come out and torch Chris Paul like he always has in the history of that matchup. Just quickly before we go, and we go to the next break, it is just announced per Woj that the Bulls and the Heat are both losing their second-round picks because of the tampering gate this past offseason. Kind of ridiculous. I want them to lose their first-round pick, but it's the way she goes. Big news broken. We'll be back shortly.
I mean, hey, at least something happened, right? So, yeah, we're just going to go jump into a break, and then we'll be right back with our hot topic conversation with Aaron Surface, who's going to join us.
PressBox on CKDJ 107.9. Welcome back to the PressBox on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box. We're going to start our hot topic now. We've got Aaron Zerfus on the phone here. He's out of town right now, but he's decided to join us for our little hot topic here. The hot topic for the week is, what is the best stadium or most beautiful stadium in sports? The criteria is, it could be your own opinion sort of thing, and make sure you explain it. So we should start with Aaron. Aaron, what do you think?
Let's see. So best stadium, I mean, you know, I've been to a few different NHL arenas. I've been to the Little Caesars Palace, almost called the Joe Louis. I've been to the Capitol Stadium, the Flyers, TD Garden. I've looked around MSG, but the best. You know what? Let's go. Allianz Field in Minnesota for the Minnesota United, well, MLS team. Great sight lines. You get real close to the action, and this is a lot there for people to have fun with.
Yeah. Okay. No, I definitely see the appeal in that one. Josh, what are you thinking?
So for me personally, I'd either have to go Oracle Arena in Golden State, Oakland. The reason is I've heard so many great things about that arena with how loud it is. When the Warriors played there for so long, now they're in the Chase Center, but when they played there for so long, I remember watching it on TV and just being like, I need to be there to watch them play a game live, because it just seems like a great, great time. Another stadium I think I'd have to put up there would be Wrigley Stadium. I think that one's, you know, obviously history, so much history around it. And then also I just like the vines on the walls. I think that's a really cool thing that they have.
Greg, what about your thoughts?
So I actually have a few. I mean, obviously when I hear most beautiful stadium, most famous, most, like the best stadium, I go immediately to like baseball fields. So obviously for baseball, Wrigley Field, one of the most iconic in sports. It's really nice. It was awesome when the Cubs won the World Series and everybody celebrating. It was great. Fenway, obviously, you know, Green Monster. It just looks really nice. Yankee Stadium, really nice. And my last one here is the newest stadium in sports, actually. It's SoFi. It's where the Rams and the Chargers play. It's like the most beautiful stadium I've ever seen in my life. If you just look at pictures, it looks amazing. Watching a game in there, it looks great. It's just really nice. It's obviously, it looks really nice because it's like newest and it's like $2 billion or something like that. But that's probably my favorite one. But in terms of most classic, it's definitely like the baseball fields for sure.
Aaron, have you ever been to a college football stadium?
Yeah, I've been to like TD Bank before, and like for the Gophers. I was around. What's Clemson Stadium?
Clemson's? Oh boy, that's a great question. I don't know the name off the top of my head, but I know the one you're talking about.
Memorial Stadium.
Yeah. Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, so I just did a tailgate party there. I looked at the stadium. We didn't have to get tickets for the game, but that was fun.
Well, I personally have got a couple of honorable mentions here. I've got what I think the most beautiful stadium in the world is, and then I've got the most beautiful stadium that I've ever been to. So first, a couple honorable mentions. An honorable mention, I'm actually going to go the soccer route a little bit here because it's just a little bit more iconic. But in terms of hockey, I think the prettiest rink in the National Hockey League is going to have to be MSG, like Madison Square Garden. I don't even think that's a question. If we're talking about football, I'm not too sure what the name is anymore, but where the Denver Broncos play, that is a good-looking stadium. It's big. It's wavy. I love it. It's got the logo in the stands. I absolutely love that one. I think Greg's looking up the name of that stadium right now, but it's changed names a couple times. I know it's something at Mile High Stadium. So,
Empower Field at Mile High.
Empower Field. That's the one. Most beautiful stadium in the world, in my opinion, is Stamford Bridge. A couple reasons. It's built in 1877. This is a very old stadium, and this stadium holds about 41,000 people. It's owned by the Chelsea Football Club, who have been around for more than 100 years, and soccer is the most predominantly played sport there, but I think this sport is iconic. I think it's beautiful. I think the stadium is a good environment. I think it's loud. It feels like you're on top of the field. And then I'm going to have to say the most beautiful stadium I've been to, believe it or not, it's actually Pegula Ice Arena in Penn State. So where the Penn State men's hockey team plays, it's a new rink. It's been around for less than 10 years kind of thing. It's not a very big rink. It only fits about 6,000 people, maybe 7 or 8, but it is a absolutely beautiful facility. It's got a very, very, very nice concession stands, very nice boxes. The seats are really well spread out. They are plastic, unfortunately, but the student section is massive. I think that's probably the most beautiful stadium in sports. Aaron, do you have any other thoughts before we let you go?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've been to Stamford Bridge before as well. It's nice. It's really compact. When I was there, I did a little tour, and they're saying, like, in terms of Premier League stadiums, it's probably one of the smaller ones, but they're like, we can't make it any bigger. Like, it's made right in the city, which just kind of brings a cool atmosphere to it.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of Premier League stadiums that are built right in the middle of a city. The unfortunate part about Stamford Bridge is they've been talking about making or demolishing it and making a new one, but unfortunately, it's right next to train tracks that are used on a daily basis, and they need to get the permit to, you know, build over that. So, all right, well, Greg, Josh, any last thoughts before we let Aaron go?
Yeah, so one other stadium that slipped my mind, I don't know why, but it's Wembley Stadium. That's another one that's definitely up there for me. And actually, after doing a bit of research while you guys were chatting, there's also a stadium in Singapore called Floating Stadium in Marina Bay. That one, you guys should look it up. It looks really, really cool. The soccer field's actually over the water. It's like floating on the water, and then all the stands are behind it. So it's actually really cool, just looking at the photos here. So that one, I think, is now breaking into my top five for sure. In terms of football stadiums, I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. I love their stadium. I like their big Jumbotron up there. Always wanted to go there. AT&T Arena, I believe it's still called. So that is where I'm trying. Stadium, sorry. Yes, not arena. But yeah, those would be mine.
All right, well, we want to thank Aaron for joining us on this Hot Topic conversation. We're going to move over to the NHL in a little bit, but thank you for joining us, Aaron. Hopefully we see you next week.
Absolutely, yeah. Have a good rest of the show, guys.
Thanks, man. See ya.
See ya.
All right, well, that was our Hot Topic. Really nice of Aaron Surface to join us here, but we're going to move on to the NHL. Who wants to start us off? Looks like it's going to be me. Okay, well, so in the NHL, we're going to talk about Jack Hughes first. Just signed an 8-year deal for $8 million a year. That's going to come up to about $64 million in total. What are you guys' first impression on this? He's still, you know, got a year left on his entry-level deal. He signed it early, so what are your thoughts?
I'll take this one to start. So, you know, considering he is the first overall pick in the 2019 draft, I kind of understand the appeal to sign him to this deal. But, I mean, I think he's been underwhelming considering he is a first pick. You know, 120 games, only 55 points in those games. He's actually a minus 27 on his career. So it's not looking too good. He's also already faced a few injuries. So I think this is kind of a premature signing from New Jersey. But at the same time, I understand the potential's there. Fast, young kid. So, Greg?
You said minus 27 he was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, career. To be fair, That's kind of skewed just because New Jersey hasn't been very good the last few years, like when he's been on the team. So it's not technically his fault, but yes, I see where you're coming from, and that is a pretty crazy number.
I will say, Greg, a lot of people consider Jack Hughes the biggest bust as an overall pick in the National Hockey League ever. And I disagree with that because Nail Yakupov still exists.
Yeah.
So,
people say that. I think it's too premature right now to call him a bust. I mean, he was drafted 2 years ago. People are saying the same thing with Lafreniere, and he was drafted last year just because he hasn't performed well. He's like, come on, like these guys are 2 years into the league. They're still kids. Like they're not even grown up yet. They haven't hit their prime. Not even close to hitting their prime. Now this deal is they saw him play well at the start of this year, and then he had an injury, went on IR for a bit, and they see that, and they're like, you know, we got to lock this guy up for 8 years, right? I mean, his entry level is going to end after next year, I believe, or maybe after this. You know, after this year, it's gonna end. Yeah, so they needed to lock him up. as we see in the NHL, 8x8 contracts are usually what these young guys start to get now after the entry level. They usually get, like, this is usually the price range they get. 8x8 is usually the normal contract for the young guys after their entry level. And I'm a big fan of Jack Hughes. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to be good for a long time. But as you said, Josh, 58 points in, or something like that in 150 games or something. I don't remember what you said, but it's something not very good when you look at his numbers. I get it. But the potential's there. They've seen him do it. He was really good before he got drafted, and he still looked good. He's just had a little bit of injury issues now. But yeah, Tyler, what are your thoughts?
I think it's a great deal. I mean, I love Jack Hughes, and I think the New Jersey Devils are going to be a very, very good team in the near future, and I'm very excited to see it because I have Jack Hughes on my fantasy team. So you know what? I'm happy. He just came off the IR. He's played one game so far. I don't believe he's playing tonight, but he's playing tomorrow night. So I'm very interested to see it. The Devils also have a lot of really good prospects coming up. They've got Dawson Mercer. They've got Nico Hischier, obviously, a very young captain. Probably one of the less experienced captains in the league. I'm excited. I think this is a great idea. And 8 years for New Jersey Jack, and whew, he's going to end up playing with his brother soon, so should be fun. All right, let's move on to the Ottawa Senators. The Senators playing the Hurricanes on Thursday evening, and then the Avalanche on Saturday. Very tough schedule. I mean, Josh, what can you make of this? Looking good for the Sens so far. So
not at all. So just taking a look right here, they're 1-9 in their last 10. Very bad. Oh. Dropped 5 in a row. They only have 46 goals for. Only in front of the Islanders as in the Eastern Conference as the worst scoring team. Also on top of that, yeah, they have a really tough schedule coming up. It's not looking too good for them. I know they were riddled with a bunch of COVID, but I'm curious on why they're not taking the same approach that the Canadiens took, in the sense that just get rid of their whole coaching staff, everything. Make some sort of change because it seems like something needs to be done.
Yeah, I agree. What do you guys think about Matt Murray going down to Belleville?
Tyler, I said this to you, said it to you before the season. I was on this train early. Matt Murray he stinks, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, obviously, he was with Pittsburgh. You know, he won a cup. He was very good for Pittsburgh. But those days are far behind him, man. Like, he's not the same player he used to be. And that contract is horrible. Like, it's just terrible for the way he's playing.
I was hoping someone would pick him up. I really was. I mean, yes, I want to see Matt Murray in a Sens jersey. Yes, I want to see him do well because we have seen him do well. He has two cups already. Yep. Like, it's hard to think about that, but Matt Murray has two Stanley Cups, one of which he won basically on his own. So, I mean, listen, Matt Murray has the potential. He's only 27, but right now, you suck. Like, you're no good. Like, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
You can really hear the emotion in Tyler's voice.
Oh, my gosh.
He's been holding this one in for some time.
Hey, listen, Sogard he's literally the backup. He's the backup.
In the AHL?
He's a backup right now. Matt Murray's the backup. Sogard is starting more than Murray.
To be fair, that's only because he just got sent down, so he doesn't know the system.
He's practiced with the team 4 times.
I know, but that doesn't mean he's going to start every game.
It's Matt Murray. He's earning $6 million.
The AHL goalie has been on the team the whole season, and Matt Murray just got sent down, so he's not going to start right away.
Yeah, that's true.
He is going to end up starting every game eventually.
I do think there is a problem with our goaltending. I also do think there's a problem with our coaching and our defense. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Florida in first place.
Actually,
that's wrong.
Toronto has
that's
taken
wrong.
Over the first.
That's
spot.
Wrong.
They're at 16-6. Yep. While Florida's at 15-4. They just took it over.
Yes, sir.
But I do like Florida a lot. They are one of my favorite teams to watch in hockey. They're fast paced. I like the 1-3-1 that they play. And I just love their roster. It's really fun to watch. But, yeah, unfortunately, this guy's team has taken over the number one slot.
That's how we do it.
So I'm actually going to say this. You're wrong. Florida is in first place because their winning percentage is higher. The NHL standings does say it doesn't matter. Florida's in first place because they've played less games as well.
One less game.
So it doesn't matter.
They have more OT losses.
It doesn't matter. They've only lost 4 games. They've won 15. Yes, they're all tied for first, but Florida is in first place at the moment. And, you know, no one would have thought about this. I mean, Washington, Toronto, Carolina, that makes sense. I mean, Edmonton's up there. That makes sense. But Florida? Like, would you guys have thought of Florida as a first-place team this year?
I mean, I thought they could have got up there. I liked their team last year, too. When they, I picked them to win the series against the Lightning. Obviously, they lost in the
six
games.
So did I,
yeah. But, I mean, that was a really fun series, first of all. But
it messed up my entire Stanley Cup bracket.
Same here. But, yeah, I wanted them to win. I thought they were going to win. I think they're a good team. One of the best defensive teams in hockey, Sergei Bobrovsky. He's playing at the level that he used to play at. He's playing really well. I'm actually surprised because I thought he was kind of falling down a little bit, but he's starting to pick himself back up. He's playing well. Obviously, you know, they have so many good players now too, like Huberdeau, Barkov. I mean, they're such a fun team to watch. Duclair, like Reinhardt, all those guys. Like, I'm a big fan of all those guys. Ekblad, like all those guys. Really fun team to watch. Really good defensively. And they all play really well together. Their chemistry's good. They have a pretty good power play. Defense is good. Like, they're probably the most all-around team in the NHL. I mean, Toronto is right now. But in total, it's Florida for sure.
Florida's a very hard-hitting team. They really come at you and try to go through you kind of thing. This has been our... this has been our NHL conversation. Sorry, we're going to head to
break.
Go
Leafs.
Yeah, we'll be back in a little bit. So stay tuned. We're going to be back with some junior hockey updates from CCHL.
The Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
On to some CCHL action for the weekend. We have a few games this weekend. Our first game is at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday. The Nepean Raiders will be hosting the Renfrew Wolves. Nepean has had a tough season so far, and it's only getting tougher. Renfrew is 13-5-2 this season, and Nepean will be on a second half of a back-to-back for this game. The next game is between two struggling teams. The Cornwall Colts will be visiting the Carleton Place Canadiens at 3 p.m. on Sunday. Both teams are at the bottom of their divisions. And our game of the week here is the Brockville Braves, who will be visiting the Pembroke Lumber Kings. Pembroke is number one in the Robinson Division, and the Lumber Kings are number three in the Robinson Division. Both teams have been playing extremely well over the course of the season. Pembroke is 16-4-3, and Brockville is 14-7-2.
Thank you, Greg. Let's talk about the standings here. In the Yzerman Division, it seems to be that the Yzerman Division is a lot less strong than the Robinson Division, as five out of six teams in the Robinson Division have more than 10 wins, and then only three in the Yzerman Division have more than 10 wins. Josh, what can you make of that?
Yeah, it just seems like Pembroke and Kentville specifically, they're both really strong teams. I think that is going to lead into kind of a controversial thing going into the playoffs, considering the junior Sens are going to play more people out of the Yzerman Division, and just naturally you're probably going to get more dubs because their team's just significantly stronger than a lot of the teams inside their own division. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the rest of it plays out. I think that the Robinson Division, they're a lot bigger, a lot stronger, a bit of an older approach to their teams, but it's the way she goes, you know.
Yeah, no, that's certainly the way the wind blows kind of thing. Let's talk about the Nepean Raiders really struggling right now, and the Cornwall Colts as well struggling, as well as the Rockland Nationals. Are we excited to see this garbage bowl on Friday, Josh?
I'm actually very looking forward to it. I'm hoping the Nepean can get something going, something to click, and we can get back on the win column. The Rockland Nationals, they've also kind of been struggling this season. They only have one more overtime loss, and that's about it, really. So it's, hopefully Nepean can get back on track, and hopefully we can get some of our guys back healthy this week.
Listen, for the Raiders, it's just one win. You win this game against Rockland, and you bump yourself up a couple standings. And
you literally jump up to the fourth
spot. This division is not very good, so you want to be in that fourth spot so that you do make the playoffs kind of thing. And I don't know. I'm ready to go watch. Myself, Tyler Sear, and Josh McGrath-Sagging are going to be on the call for that one. We're going to be calling it from CIHA, and it should be a fun one. It's always a fun rink to call in. I mean, we get our own booth, you know, we get tables, we have plugs. It's easy, 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 easy. Whereas in Carleton Place, it wasn't so easy. We were sitting in the stands, plugging up our stuff in the roof. The rafters were super low, so it was not a very good game. But, you know, hey, nonetheless, still a really fun environment to be in and a very fun place to be in. Nepean's winning percentage is 0.295, so not so good if you ask me. And then
The Ottawa Junior Senators are considered the fourth best junior hockey team in the country. What can you guys think of that?
I mean, yeah, they only lost, what, three games here? Three games and two OT/shootout losses. Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to win the league here. I mean, they've got the best record in the league. I mean, in the Yasmin division, they're, like, the really only, like, really good team besides Hawkesbury. Like, those two are, like, the only really good teams in the division. The Robinson division is kind of stacked, though. Everybody's got a winning record except the last two teams.
And even Carleton Place is 10-11-0. Like, yeah. Carleton Place is out of a playoff spot right now, and they've won 10 games.
Yeah, if they were in the
Yasmin,
they'd make the playoffs for sure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, and Navin's pretty good, too. Like, when you look at Navin, that's kind of scary. I mean, but that being said, I don't know what to expect from the CCHL this year because Nepean had a hot start when, they brought in a couple new coaches, a couple new players, and now it seems that those players just seem to get injured and nothing is going to go Nepean's way this year. So hopefully that could change this weekend. If things do want to change, they have to happen this weekend. The Ottawa Junior Senators just beat the Nepean Raiders 14-4 without their best player, Simon Isabel. So that is truly concerning if you're a fan of any other team in the CCHL, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm looking right here at the goals for and goals against. They have a 48 differential for the Junior Sens. Absolutely monsters on the ice this year.
That's almost
the team closest
double
to them in terms of scoring is Pembroke with 86. So they still have a 20-point gap on the second-place team in scoring. It's pretty crazy.
Which is crazy, too, because one of those three losses for Ottawa has come from Pembroke. Pembroke beat the Ottawa Junior Senators in Ottawa, which is really, like, you get a bit of a shine of hope there because Nepean almost beat Ottawa as well. That was a good game, wasn't it, Josh?
This past one?
The Pembroke one.
Oh, the Pembroke one. I thought you said Ottawa. But, yeah, no, the Pembroke game was really good. It was really good up until the third period. We got frustrated, and then Pembroke pulled away in the end. But, Nepean, they show lots of highlights, lots of highs, but they have lots of lows. And I think that's just, you know, them being young, new coaching staff, as you said. So I think time will tell. Hopefully we can get back. If we get a win this week, we go back up to the fourth slot and we build from there.
I think Nepean needs to fix their defensive turnovers. I've said it so many times. Greg is tired of hearing me say defensive turnovers. But you know what? It's true. So, Greg, any last thoughts on the CCHL?
Nepean is... I mean, I said this to you when we were doing the Navin game, actually. They can't play a full 60 minutes of hockey. They have maybe one good period of game, it feels like, and like the next two, they just roll over and die, or I don't know what happens to them.
It's never, ever the second period. It's either the first or the third period.
Yeah,
so
they can't play a full 60 minutes, and that's always their issue, right? That, once again, we talked about this again, the defensive turnovers. As I said, they were throwing it into the neutral zone for no reason, throwing it into the middle of their zone, just allowing passes right wide open into the slot with no defense in front on the guy in the slot. Not moving their feet. They're getting beat down the ice. It's, they need to clean a lot of stuff up if they want to make the playoffs this year.
All right. Well, this has been our CCHL chat. We're going to give it to Greg to outro us. Greg, you got about 2 minutes.
All right. So it was a good show, obviously. We did end up getting Aaron on the phone, so that was nice. Hopefully next week we'll have a full four. I don't know if Aaron out of town next week as well? Okay, never mind. We won't get a full four, but maybe we'll call him again, get his insights. It was a good show. We want to thank everybody for listening. Tune in to our Christmas special in a few weeks. It's going to be 3 hours long, so that's going to be fun.
Yep.
Going to get a few guests. We don't know who they are yet, obviously, but we will keep you guys updated who we're going to have on the Christmas special. It should be a fun time. Thank you guys for listening. This has been Greg.
Josh.
Go ahead.
Josh.
and I'm Tyler, and we will see you next week on CKTJ 107.9's The Press Box. Until later, bye-bye.